Do you pray?
Yes.
Daily?
Try to.
What do you pray for?
Peace of mind.
You do? Hmm? Good. You feel disturbance of mind?
Yes.
You do. If it's not too private, what does it disturb you?
It's the world in general. The way it's structured. Not the way the world itself is structured physically, but the way man is structured society. I think about the kind of evil, you know.
Right. But you're not finding fault with the Creator, I suppose.
No.
Whether he structured wrongly or something.
No, I don't think so.
He did okay.
No,
it's a man. You know, of course, you alone cannot change the whole world, that you know,
yeah.
Unless you believe that you can do.
No.
Jesus tried, Buddha tried, and Krishna tried. And it's not one man's job. But long back I had heard that whatever you want, let it start with you. If you want peace in the world, for example, let it start with your peace of mind first. It has to start with me if I want peace, you know, or in the world even. So if the structure has to, something change, thing we don't like, then is there, I would start then with myself, seeing what structure in me I should change. At least I don't contribute to more disturbance, or at least I contribute to more peace. From that angle, do you believe that it starts from the self?
Yes, but it's, although you can structure it that way in your thinking, there's a real world out there that has a tendency to crush those types of thoughts.
So, what's the next step then? Supposing you have structured yourself amicably, or rightly, how would you meet with the world, or as the world is there, as real, as you say? How would you meet with that? Just go on groaning about it?
I'm in the process of working that out, I suppose.
Do you see it's possible the world would structure as you might like?
It's comprehensible. Whether it's possible or not is to be seen.
It's a long time though. But in the meantime, we have to live though in this world. So my next question is, how would you meet with the situation in the meantime till it changes or whatever? Yeah, that's it.
I had a shield over my head and get a job.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Well, let's see if peace of mind can start with one's own self. It's not a very new subject, I know. But that leads to many other achievements if your mind is in peace. You know, if you're in peace, you can concentrate better. If you can concentrate better, you can achieve more, whatever the areas might be. With a disturbed mind, achievement is long overdue because concentration is suffered. Disturbed mind cannot one-pointedly seek out what it wants. Naturally, peace of mind is just not for its own sake. Then we extend the idea for enlightenment and God realization or peace salvation, for which also peace of mind is a must. It's not that God comes first and then comes peace. Would be nice to hear, but it doesn't work that way. mind has to be relaxed and peaceful, well-pointed, for any worldly or spiritual achievement. Some have called it meditative serenity. I'm not trying to discuss with you, but just one more point about it. Do you know the ways of looking at the world? And each one has his own view. Right or wrong, we see the world as we choose to see. Choice is your and mine. Not that world is not badly structured by man. I'm not disagreeing with that point. Whether it's air pollution or nuclear or any social, political things. But the question is, if you and I are waiting till the world structures itself by you and me and others in the right way, it's quite a long way to go, and we may not achieve while we are living. In that sense alone, we choose to see the world as we choose to see, right though. Let's assume nobody's wrong. Even then we see differently. This being the perspective view of each one's psychological makeup, you're choosing to see the world, though it may be right way of looking at from your angle. But that may not be the only perspective of the world. In other words, I'm coming to a point that where does the compassion fit in? Yes, to be more clear, if I want to see the world, I want to see, and that's the way it is, let's say structure is not right. Even I could say that. 1,000 things, I can make a list. Thing is, and they are wrong, except probably me, you know. The one who thinks he is never wrong. That's the problem with the peace of mind. The one who wants peace of mind wants to see the wrong outside, which may be there. I'm not saying it's not there. But also is with me too, are the one who thinks. So what my question is that people are wrong in my view or your view or somebody's view, or the government is wrong, or the society is wrong, or some institutions are wrong, structure or systems. Then how do I be compassionate to anyone? They are wrong, you know. They should be changed and punished or whatever. Where does the compassion fit in? In other words, how are I to cultivate that? They are wrong, but I want them to be right. How can I be compassionate?
Doesn't compassion go with the perspective?
Well, that's what my question is. How would you coincide with that? Perspective, let's say, is critical. Let's put that, analytical.
Yeah.
Where does the compassion fit in with analysis and criticism?
How?
If you make compassion, you're not going to be critical. Just try to think now, just a moment.
Well, wouldn't it depend on the perspective? And if the perspective could hold a compassionate surface?
Is that a compassion if it's on the surface?
Well,
you're being with people, and compassion, you are being what they feel. That's compassion, if I'm right. What they feel, how they look at it, how they are in their situation, in conditions they live in, that you're compassionate to them as they are. Not that you're accepting it. That compassion is being with them as if, you know. The compassion has no meaning. You have to see their whatever weaknesses or wrongs or deformities, whatever. And naturally, you're not accepting that, but at the same time, you're being them as if. That's compassion, otherwise it has no meaning. As if you've been sad with the sadness and, you know, so on. If it's compassion on the surface, that's a courtesy. That's not the real compassion. In other words, if truly you become compassionate, as I understand, if you become compassionate truly, I think the view of criticism ends. To me, that's an experience. In other words, if I then don't criticize, analyze, or find wrong in a sense, then my whole view changes, you see, of the world. maybe then I would see is very logical, very causal, cause and effect sequence, made world structure. That we have made it as we are.
So, in other words, you're saying through the perspective of compassion?
I think to live in the world, that was my earlier question, that at the same time, till you have peace of mind, you have to live in the world too. And I cannot live in the world without being compassionate. And I'll beat my children all the time otherwise. You know, they are so naughty. You understand what I'm saying? A family structure, I'm saying, supposing. If I'm only critical, analytical, this child is not doing well, that's not doing well, he's wrong, she's wrong, you know what I mean? And if I don't hold compassion, I cannot live with my children. You see my point? As a human being, as a fellow being, I cannot live with my neighbors or my countrymen or my friends if I'm not compassionate. It will disturb me if I lose my compassion. That's my experience. That if I lose my compassion, I feel disturbed. Everything disturbs me. Everything, or at least what goes wrong. How will you meet with the wrongdoers?
So how do you deal with compassion on a multi-level?
Well, good question. I believe in reality, meaning realism, and practicality. So being practical and real, at the same time, I always know inside that they are ignorant or imperfect. They will do their wrongs. I should have a large heart and be compassionate. At the same time, do my duty and meet with people as they are, expecting them to be perfect, but not with a rod in the hand, but with the love in the heart. That gives me a long rope to live. You see my point? That's my experience. We may not be able to reach to the extent saying, God forgive them for they do not know. We know that they do not know. Or whatever they know. So my compassion would be not in the surface, but being with them at the same time hoping, praying that they be better. And then I contribute, this comes the third point. Then I contribute in the sense what my duty is, what are my propensities or my temperaments or what I could do under circumstances, and that much I'll be satisfied with if I can do it. Maybe that time may not come that I see the world changed, but at the same time I have peace of mind. Try these three ingredients. One, knowing the reality and practicality of how I or others are, taking the imperfection to be a reality for the time being. I be compassionate till they change. Not the rod in my hand, not the thoughtful kind of aggression, you know what I'm saying? Psychological aggression, I wouldn't believe. And at the same time, doing my duty perfectly well, I'll give you an example, a rather story, anecdote. It may not be 100% applicable, but you will know the idea. There was one sage sitting near the ocean beach with a small bowl in hand, trying to take the water out of the ocean and throwing on the beach. All the time doing that. One passerby was noticing this. He couldn't understand why this holy man and known holy man is doing what? I mean, taking from the ocean bowl of water and throwing on the beach in the sand. So he came near and said, "Sir, if you don't mind, I have a question." He said, "Well, go ahead, son." And he said, "Well, I don't know what you're doing." He said, "I'm emptying the ocean." And the man laughed. He said, "With the small bowl, the whole ocean, you're kind of emptying. I mean, it'll never happen. It's impossible." And do you know what the sage replied? He said, "If you don't understand, take a second bowl and sit with me and go on emptying along with me." It needs patience. Idea is not that he would empty the ocean. That may not happen. But he is at peace. He has patience. He's doing with a peace of mind, whatever it is. His concentration is there. And he's telling others, you could do the same if you want to. May not happen if you're looking to achievement, but may spiritually speaking, you may achieve something else while emptying the ocean. You might get that love for others, compassion. You may understand them better. Not because everybody is right. I understand there are wrong things. But there are two views, again, perspective, as you were saying. I've learned this in my working, that I do my duty, whatever it is, have patience, have compassion for all. Where they need help, help if you can. And wait for God to do the rest. It may not be on your head, everything. You see, that's only the case that when we bring everything on our head that we lose the peace of mind. We can only do what we can do, what our capacities are, God-given propensities, temperament, nature. Understand this revolutionary thought to change the world. I lived through that years. It doesn't work that way. It's a good thought, but it doesn't work. If I want change only leave, and I cannot do. What I'm saying, it's not that this thought is wrong, but it doesn't work that way. Love for people, patience, compassion, doing one's own duties, leaving the rest unto the God, brings a peace of mind. Try it. There are many things we don't see because minds are disturbed. When the mind is in relaxed condition, peaceful, you see clearly what you otherwise might have said you don't know. The very thing with the peace of mind, settled attitude, you'll have answered. That's what I meant in the beginning, start with ourselves. Let us have our own peace of mind first. Nothing gives peace of mind except you within you. That's what I mean. Outside things are for some needs, some gratifications, some needs, some wants, some pleasures. Whether it's a dress or food or a home or a car or TV or sound equipment or traveling modes and things like that. Those are needed wants and so on, we want them. But peace of mind doesn't depend upon those things. You're thinking that way, therefore you're running after such things to give you peace of mind. But the truth is fact that we do not get peace of mind from those things we are seeking we thought will give the peace of mind. In other words, peace of mind doesn't depend upon outer conditions. It may be a truth to you or not, but peace itself is unconditional. So long we are basing the peace of mind on the factors or conditions outside you, you'll never get it. We've tried and tried since ages. With the peace of mind was dependent upon relationships or clothes or homes or food or whatever, wants and achievements. No, those things we want, that's okay, achievements to be something. That's okay. Whether peace of mind is dependent upon those things, we seem to think that way though. But that doesn't work that way somehow. It's only because when your mind is more free and your mind is more relaxed, as if not wanting, that you relax, that you feel peace of mind. Not because you shouldn't have things. Those things are for certain needs. You want to read a book, have a book. But whether your peace of mind is dependent on that book will be a myth. So when you want peace of mind, try to relax. See what agitates you. What excites you, what disturbs you. Try to subside the mind. Without as if having anything. Gain what you want, you work for that. That's okay. You want a tape recorder, fine. Try to, you know, earn and so on. Or you want a job, hunt after it. But when you base a peace of mind on these things, we are getting into fallacy. This to dissociate, to separate these two things is what is the initial stage of spiritual growth actually, which I might go further now. This basic fallacy a blessing of peace, blessing of joy, blessing of love, blessing of our freedom. On the conditions and things we want outside is the first fallacy human mind makes. And that is why they don't get it, because wrong starting. Peace is within you and me. It's your own inheritance, it's your own unconditional wealth. You have to discover that within you without basing it on outside anything. The outside things you need. If you're feeling cold, you want a sweater, that's fine. But putting on a sweater, you'll have peace of mind, maybe for 2 minutes, maybe for 5 minutes. Beyond that again, something else will crop up. Okay, you want a peace side, you feel real gratified. Medium size or large size, you know? And large size is $18, and medium size how much? I don't know. Now that time, 5 minutes, 10, 15, you feel real good. You know, the third chakra gets blown up. You know, and you feel blood rushing and pleasure and you feel happy about it. And that will last 5, 10, 15 minutes, half an hour, 2 hours. Again after that, you'll see peace is disturbed. Again something else. It's eternally so. There are no limits to these things. If you are basic, this is the first fallacy human mind makes between the peace of mind and the things outside of life. Many have erroneously believed before that perhaps, therefore, if the peace of mind is within and nothing dependent upon conditions outside, then why to desire or why to want, then that means we give up everything or what? No, that's second fallacy. Misunderstanding, they call it. No preacher, I mean worth the name, prophets or holy people, have ever said that don't have things what you want. But if you're basing the peace of mind on those things, you're slipping into something erroneous way. That's the first mistake we make. We slip like a kind of unknowingly, ignorantly. For peace of mind, you have to go within. The peace of mind is itself a condition for something higher than that. That if you're peaceful, relaxed, one-pointed, then you can concentrate upon higher things, the joy, the freedom, the whatever world is structured to change, you will have tremendous strength to do that. But believing again is not you and me doing, it's God. We simply can be instruments. We can allow God to work through us. We can allow the light to come through us. We can allow the consciousness to awaken within us. Being me as mind and body, as instruments, the vehicles, the conveyance. So let the light work through you and me, or God work through you and me as you believe, you may believe. That can only happen, we are now in the spiritual realm talking, that can only happen when me reduces the ego. We cannot allow God and light to work through us unless ego reduces. So long ego individual concept remains intact, strictly speaking, we're not allowing God and light to work through us. And if they're not working through us, we're not open, and if we're not open, peace of mind will be a dream. This peace of mind itself is a condition for higher thinking, higher consciousness. To allow that to work through us, you and I as the cosmic parts of cosmos. You know, whole cosmic energy is around us. It's not simply there, you know, up. We are in that up. If you see the map of the galaxies, Earth is one of so many billions of other things. We are in the space already. We talk of going to space, but we're already in the space. Our planet is hurtling in what? It's one of the parts of this space. If you see this way, that's why they said kingdom of God is within you, God is within you, light is within you, that's wherever you are. There also, of course, but here too. Our earth is already moving around in the space, whole solar system. If that is so, we can only start where we are. Therefore, the common psychological saying is, you can only start where your mind or what you are today, now. You cannot start from there outside you, which you are not. Whatever the sinner virtues we might be, or part of it, whatever, wrong or right, we can only start from there in. This needs compassion. You also can start from where you are only. You can't go that heavenly structure of the world you are dreaming about. You cannot start from that end. And this needs patience. Patience, peace. This is self-changing transformation. Change is psychological, transformation is spiritual. Or total being changing into transforming into something will be spiritual growth. Vertical growth. We are looking very horizontally, very politically, very socially, very humanly even. We can only make subtle revolutions and changes. But we have seen through the history that these changes go on repeating all the time, revolution, wars and battles. And all the time history is replete with these things. We should not deceive ourselves that as if those horizontal changes into two dimensions as if are going to make a big deal. It's a vertical change, it's transformation. When you and I begin to change inside, when we want to achieve peace first, it's not selfish. And that is imperative, because that's the only thing you can do and I can do. You may fail to change others, but you are right over yourself, and I am right over myself. At least let me do that. You see the point? I may not have right over you, but I should not lose right over me. So let me see if I have got my peace of mind. And if I haven't, my claim over others to have peace of mind is a sham. How can I? I, for one, for over myself, if I can't have that control, or whatever word we use, how can we expect over others? This is self-transformation, starting with the self where you and I are. That's the point of existence where you can start, before we think too magnifying to change larger scales. Nothing wrong to aspire that, but we cannot do unless I change, unless I be transformed. We want peace from others. World should be in peace. It has to start with me. This self indicating finger to ourself is the first starting step for a spiritual growth before we come to universal aspect. It's not simply perspective. On the contrary, it's the end of perspectives. Even if I believe or we believe, okay, I'm in peace, or I'm not in peace, I don't hurt anyone, I don't harm anyone, I'm a good person, okay. Is there somewhere I'm imperfect? Isn't some structure in me which requires change and transformation? If I cannot do that much, I cannot think more bigger areas. So the question arises, should I wait till the world changes or should I wait till me changes? To me, easier is me, one person, to change and transform. Am I a victim of my habits that I want to give up but I cannot? And then if I expect somebody else to give up habit, something like that or whatever, will that be effective? Spiritual growth, therefore, the inner opening, awakening of consciousness, is totally dependent upon the work on the self, self-introspection, self-transformation, auto-suggestiveness, prayer, of course. When that comes, to me, things are easier. I begin to see the hand of God in various ways. Not that people are not suffering elsewhere, but then you'll see the logic or condition or understanding of it. You'll see the what you call justice of it. Not that they should suffer, but you'll see the justice why we bring our happiness or misery over our head by our own doings. Not because that should be accepted, but because that will give us some peace of mind that nothing is happening unjustifiably under the nose of God. That doesn't mean we say, let them suffer who suffer. We still help them with compassionate, loving. And whatever help we can give, we should give. But we accept the basic reality. There's no injustice in God's kingdom. Man has to still believe this. It's easy to blame God or man anywhere for me, except myself. Maybe I may be better than some others or worse, whatever. But that doesn't mean I'm perfect. Every human being, therefore, will see that they are imperfect. And the imperfect portion of their personality will disturb themselves and others. And that is one of the indirect definitions of being imperfect. The very portion of imperfection in anybody will be disturbing that person along with others who are related to that person. You can see, God forbid, when you are sad, your mommy will be sad too. She'll be worrying about, no? It affects. Any imperfection portion in any human being will be itself a cause of disturbance of the earth. You said cosmos or universe, where we could say spiritually, even scientifically, nothing happens in any corner of the universe which does not affect the other corners. It does. Therefore we contribute our goodness or badness, whatever it may be. Knowingly or unknowingly, we may think we don't hurt anyone, but if their wrong thoughts, their wrong doings, or my imperfect part of personality is going to disturb the atmosphere, that is the realm of vibrations, energy vibrations, which we don't see, so therefore we do not intellectualize. The energy patterns and the vibration patterns disturb or help to others without our knowing. So we have to thoroughly purify ourselves. That's why the purity of heart has been preached throughout all the religions. If you send out pure thoughts, pure feelings, whether somebody receives it or not, but underneath, as energy patterns and vibratory phenomena, they will reach others. Whether they know it or not, it will affect. It's not because ocean is so much water. What does it matter if one steamer only breaks and the oil spills? But we know how much marine life ends there. Same thing. Our vibrations, good or bad, holy or unholy, will affect others. Therefore, we have to be very careful what we think, what we feel, what we desire. Age-old spirituality, but it still holds good. I try to be careful at each moment. What I think, what I feel, what I act, what I wish. Even in dreams, we have to be careful, if you can. But that's a higher stage, how to control our dreams. I'm not going into that, but what do we unknowingly or knowingly, consciously or unconsciously wish or do, act, feel, happens. So much purity of heart and mind, therefore, is needed if you want peace of mind. It's not peace on the paper. You see, treaty signed or agreement signed, you know, no war pacts. That's not what I'm talking about. That remains on paper. We are talking about minds. We have many platitudes and letters, promises, I won't do this, I won't do this, I'll do this. But things happen again. We repeat because we are weak or we are helpless or we are imperfect. Because we cannot control our minds and vibrations. So we still do the things we promise we want. We promise in the, you know, before the minister, lifelong I'll take care of my woman, and woman says, I'll take care of my man, you know, till we die. And then wait for something. and they change. Promises do not hold good for long if we are creatures of habits. Our psychological patterns make us do things what we may not like to do. And this, to change psychological patterns, is the domain of yoga and spirituality. How to change those patterns of mind, our way of thinking, way of feeling, way of not being selfish, how to purify. And at the same time, go on doing your duties, whatever they may be. This relaxes the mind. At least I am doing my best. And if God be pleased with me, that's it. We cannot do everything, you and me, as human beings. We can do whatever we can do. There's much beyond every human being we could not achieve, even if we wish. Not at least in 10 or 20, 30, 40, 100 years. Many times you'll see, take the newspaper and go back into one century old newspapers, what they wished and promised and agreed. And you'll find the history show they did quite opposite, or wrong. They went reverse. They wanted peace, but they ended into wars. Always you'll see this. They agreed, they sat down and talked about peace. The next war came right around the corner. So is with the individuals. We many times think in our mind, I won't do such and such thing. I won't at least expect. We end up doing only because of habits or weaknesses. To control these weaknesses, purify ourselves, all these practices are about, whether it's yoga, meditations, prayers, they're all for that. It has to start with you and me. There's no other choice. If I cannot do for me something which is lacking, how can I do that for others? I won't have strength and power to do that. In this way, we live and let live. Then we then radiate the vibrations of peace to others. Or you might say, the vibrations of sanity. So that we don't send the vibrations, antagonistics, or, you know, opposites and enemical and so on. It affects, even if we don't say it. There's one omniscient one who knows what's going on in our minds. I may hide for what I can hide, but that doesn't mean it's not known to my Lord. We think we're hiding, but because we forget God, we forget also that He knows. If we were to remember God is looking at me, how would I do it? I don't mean everybody is wrong. I'm just giving the portion of the imperfections and wrongs in anybody, how to correct that. If I were to believe God is looking at me, how would I do? I don't mean to be afraid of God, but at least I'll be consciously looking at, and He's all powerful and He's all omnipotent and my Lord and Creator of the universe. How would He expect of me to behave, to be on earth? And maybe we forget this all the time, that He's looking at us. The only, I wouldn't say defect, only defect in course is that He doesn't right away comes and punishes or catches our neck. That's the only thing. But not that He doesn't see us. If this were the case, we were aware somebody like Him is looking at us, how would I feel and think and act? In a psychological, or rather spiritual, non-dualistic pattern, it is said, live the life of consciousness. Be conscious what you do and think and feel. That's the end of way of putting it. That's the mode of non-dualistic philosophy. So be careful, attentive. Be conscious what you do, think and feel, or how you behave. Not as I seek to be gratified, but as He would be pleased, so that I be pleased too. Or non-dualistically, live the life of consciousness. that you be aware of what you think, what you feel, what you act at each moment and space you live in. Try to be awakened. See that ego doesn't block your view. Ego comes and blinds us all the time. Me and my for me every time. Me is quite the pinnacle, or not pinnacle, as if the center of the whole life we live in. And naturally, when my consciousness wants to open up, awaken into a higher kind of vertical, then ego comes and blocks it. What about me? Me wants this way and that way. That's where the block comes. Once this consciousness begins to open up and each particle of space and time you are in, that you awaken and clearly seeing, you will never do wrong. Will never hurt anybody. You'll never have a blinding question, I don't know. It opens up the vistas in us. You'll find therefore the ego as the root cause of the unconsciousness. As if ego wants to understand while retaining its own existence and its contradiction. Ego can understand intellectually, that's true. But ego cannot open up awakening without losing itself. And losing in a sense not in the Pacific Ocean, losing unto the Lord, unto the light. And when you lose something in light, you become enlightened. When you lose something like ego unto God, you become godly. I won't say you become God, because that is blasphemy in many eyes, but at least godly, yes. When you are throwing up your ego into something, it becomes that thing, particularly. And the ego is a block to opening up the consciousness. I wouldn't call ego devil, it has both good and bad things. But that's a part of, root cause of the unconsciousness. And so long unconsciousness or ignorance, darkness remains, we won't know much. It's something like in darkness, light has to come in. We do not fight with the darkness. In the darkness, you carry the light, the lamp only. But if you fight with the darkness to leave, it doesn't. The solution is to bring in light. To bring in remembrance of Lord or some meditation, some higher consciousness, then the darkness leaves. And when darkness leaves, you see things clearly. What was enigma or complexity or confusion or disturbance just doesn't remain, it relaxes. And that consciousness itself is blissful, it gives you joy, the ananda. When you awaken more, you're happy. So joy comes from within, peace comes from within, freedom comes from within, love comes from within. These are all unconditional treasures. Ego is the one blocking these things, it limits them. Ego wants only that much happiness, what it can do. That's it. Beyond that, again, unhappiness. Ego can bring so much peace only. Beyond that, again, mind gets disturbed. Ego can give you that much freedom. Beyond that, again, you feel trapped in or helpless. Ego can give you so much understanding of things in the world. Beyond that, you are unknowing. You say, I don't know. Ignorance persists beyond that. Domain of ego.